sugar and real fats, such as butter and heavy cream. In fact, I use a lot of butter and heavy cream. One time, my teenage son asked if all of that butter was just for me. Yes, son, it is. Get your own butter. Margarine? Never. I want to share this with you. Since following intermittent fasting, I have become a food snob. It's true. I care a lot more about what I put into my body now, and I don't eat something just because it is there. I am more aware of how foods make me feel, and I am actually enjoying high-quality foods more than junk foods. Many intermittent fasters discover this same thing about themselves. We realize that food becomes something to be savored, and we don't want to waste our meals on garbage. Do I eat pizza? Yes, I love pizza. I eat it frequently. But now that I am an intermittent faster, I am more likely to hold out for high-quality pizza rather than settle for frozen grocery store pizza. In fact, I would never settle for a frozen grocery store pizza now. Not because I think they are, quote, bad for me, but because I would rather eat high-quality pizza. It tastes better and makes me happier. I am worth high-quality pizza, darn it. I won't eat Cool Whip, but I will eat real whipped cream. I won't eat fat-free cheese, but I will eat full-fat cheese. I don't drink diet sodas, but I'll have a real Coke if I want one. I always choose the highest quality foods that are delicious. Every time. Or I wait and eat later if the food choices are not to my liking. I delay rather than deny. I am absolutely willing to not eat at all rather than settle for something that isn't going to be delicious and satisfying. Would it be better for me to avoid all processed foods and only eat foods that are presented the way nature intended? Sure it would. I have no doubt. There are some very compelling arguments against processed foods, particularly highly refined grains and sugars. However, I've tried to live that way, and I feel overly restricted by the limitations. A life without white flour or sugar? No cookies or cake ever again? No Doritos? No thank you. I'd rather have a shorter eating window and eat what makes me happy. Delay, don't deny. So is it wrong to watch what you eat when you are an intermittent faster? Absolutely not. You can be an intermittent faster and eat according to any preferred eating style. Intermittent fasting plus low carb? Check. Intermittent fasting plus vegan? Sure. Intermittent fasting plus all organic? Great choice. Intermittent fasting plus the standard American diet? Go for it. The tool of intermittent fasting works with any eating style. As long as you follow the guidelines for what to ingest during the fast, obviously. If you are spiking your insulin during the fast, all bets are off. If you do want to clean up your diet and avoid overly processed foods, you'll assuredly be healthier than I am. And one of the best foods I read about avoiding processed foods is The Science of Skinny. The author also recommends that you eat frequently throughout the day, which I do not suggest, obviously, but her food recommendations are fantastic. If you are interested in moving toward fewer processed foods, start by reading her book. I'm not going to eat that way because there's too much denying for me, but if you are interested, check it out. One more subject that needs to be addressed, alcohol. Can alcohol be part of an intermittent fasting lifestyle? Yes, but be careful. First of all, be cautious about opening your window with alcohol. After a period of fasting, the alcohol will go straight to your bloodstream and you will feel the effects very quickly. For best results, have food with your drinks. Even so, be careful. I have said that twice, so you know I mean it. I went to a party about a month ago, and I didn't really have a lot to drink, but I also was busy socializing, and I didn't have much to eat either. The alcohol went straight to my system, and it wasn't pretty. Always have plenty of food if you're drinking, and understand that you can't drink as much as you used to be able to drink. When intermittent fasting, you are now a cheap drunk, and it's important to recognize that, to avoid your spouse having to place the trash can beside the bed. Not that that happened to me. This is a completely hypothetical story, and I will never drink bourbon again. Oops. As with food, intermittent fasting has also made me a snob when it comes to what I'll drink. I have one perfect glass of Prosecco with dinner most nights. One, not two. I could have two if I wanted to, but I don't want to. One seems to be enough for me. I listen to my body, and I don't overdo it. As a side note, I read an article that said that one glass of champagne or Prosecco a day will prevent Alzheimer's, and even if it's a fake story, I choose to embrace it in principle. One other note about alcohol. If you are trying to lose weight, alcohol may not be your friend. I've read that our bodies burn off the alcohol first, and so that may affect your weight loss. In addition, your inhibition is lower when drinking, and you may eat more and over a longer period of time than you would have without the alcohol. When I was in weight loss mode, I avoided alcohol completely for a short period of time until I met certain weight loss goals. I drank water one New Year's Eve, in fact, and you know how much I love champagne. Chapter 16. Let's talk about maintenance. I have been in many diet groups over the years, and people seem to struggle with weight regain. We all know the statistics. Something like fewer than 5% of dieters are able to maintain a weight loss. I have good news. I believe that we have found the secret to an effortless maintenance. It's this. Keep doing what you are doing. Boom. Done. As long as we maintain our fasting regimen with consistency and keep from spiking insulin during the fast, our bodies should happily maintain our ideal weight. The Herrings, Bert, who created the Fast 5 plan, and his wife, found through surveying longtime fasters that maintenance was not an issue for those who stick to their recommended 5-hour daily eating window long term. Krista Verity found the same thing in her every other day diet research. Those who maintain a fasting schedule are able to easily maintain their weight loss over a long period of time. And in the every other day diet, the maintenance fasting schedule is not every other day, thank goodness. You still fast, but not as frequently. Ever since I gave up stevia in my coffee, I have had zero trouble with weight regain. Prior to giving up stevia, I did struggle with about 8 pounds of regain, but ever since I cut it out during the fast, my clothes have just continued to get looser month after month. When I look back at the various diet groups I have been in over the years, and I think of the people who keep having to go back to heavily restricting to re-lose the weight they keep regaining, I think there are two common problems. One is the use of flavored or sweet zero-calorie products during the fasting period. They all claim it works for them, but I would argue that if it works, why do you have to keep losing the same 10 to 20 pounds over and over again? The other common problem is that people see goal as a finish line, and when they get there, they can, quote, go back to a normal life. I have news for you. There is no finish line. Fasting is a lifestyle, and there's a reason for that. As a lifestyle, if we continue to follow it most days, we will succeed at keeping our bodies balanced hormonally, and weight maintenance is a breeze. If we go back to eating frequently most days, we will be in the same hormonal mess that caused us to gain weight in the first place. The lifestyle that caused you problems in the past will cause you problems again if you return to it. So, the good news is that you can maintain your weight loss if you keep up some sort of fasting regimen. You can experiment to figure out what works for you as a maintenance lifestyle. For me, I need to keep to a pretty consistent routine with not very many planned indulgences. Fortunately, that is easy. The bad news is that you will never be done and you won't be returning to your prior eating schedule. It didn't work for you then and it won't suddenly start working for you now. As I mentioned in a previous chapter, you can be flexible when you need to for special occasions. You already know that I went on 2 cruises last summer, and I didn't follow my normal fasting schedule. I did try to delay my first meal of the day as long as possible, but once I opened my window each day, it was open. I fully enjoyed myself on both cruises. When I returned home, my pants were tight, but it only took about a week back on my regular fasting schedule for my body to go back to normal. As long as I keep to the fast as recommended, without spiking insulin during the day, and I continue an intermittent fasting lifestyle, maintenance is actually easy. I hope that you find the same to be true for you. Chapter 17, Sharing Intermittent Fasting with Others. To share or not to share, the more intermittent fasting is understood as a legitimate approach to health and weight loss, the more open people will be to hearing about it. That being said, there are decades of bad dietary advice that must be unlearned first. Not everyone is ready to hear about intermittent fasting. Here's a fun experiment. Go up to someone and tell them that you never eat until dinner, and then you only eat one meal per day. Or tell them that 3 times per week you fast completely. They will probably tell you that you are likely in starvation mode right now, that you must eat 6 small meals every day to protect your metabolism, and then they will worry that you might have an eating disorder. I have gotten that lecture many times. Most of the people who have lectured me are either heavier now than they were when they first criticized fasting, or they are now intermittent fasters themselves. Nothing will win people over to your crazy way of thinking like success. Suddenly, you're not so crazy, and they want to learn more. Here's the funny part. No one ever lectured me when I weighed 210 pounds. No one told me that I was harming myself by eating so much food. It's only when I began skipping meals that I started to get pushback from people. It's okay to keep fasting to yourself if you don't want to talk about it with others. When people are asking you how you are losing weight, tell them that you are watching what you eat. That's true. If people ask why you aren't eating at any particular moment, tell them that you plan to eat later. That's also true. It is really none of their business what you eat or don't eat. I have also found that most people won't even notice that you aren't eating. I went to a party once where no one knew I was fasting. I drank water only, and not one person asked me why I wasn't eating. They were all too drunk to care. I am mostly kidding. The point is that no one noticed I was drinking ice water and that I didn't eat. There are some occasions where it's harder to hide what you're doing. If everyone at your workplace eats lunch together and you suddenly stop eating lunch, they are going to notice. People will definitely comment on what you are doing, and there may be a great deal of pressure from others to eat. I, too, faced that pressure. I remember one particular lunch in the teacher's workroom. I sat there drinking my water, and two different people tag-teamed me about how I should be eating. They were relentless. If I had any doubts about fasting, it would have been hard to deal with the pressure from them. Fortunately for me, I'm very confident and well-read about fasting, so I stood my ground. Even so, it was immensely irritating. One of the teachers sent me an apology email later, so it was obvious that I was annoyed. There are several ways that you can deal with this type of issue. You can avoid situations where others are eating to keep the focus off of you. Instead of sitting with others who are eating, work through lunch, as an example. You could convince a friend to fast with you so you have support from a buddy. Safety in numbers. You can even tell them that your doctor has you on a time-restricted eating plan. Hey, I have a doctorate. I'm Dr. Stevens, after all. Or you can confidently tell people what you are doing and why and ignore the criticisms. That can be very hard, and it constantly amazes me how other people think that what you're eating is somehow any of their business. As you probably know, I follow the last suggestion, and I talk openly about fasting. At the age of 47, I no longer feel like I need to get approval from others about my lifestyle choices, and I have a big mouth, so I'll talk about fasting with anyone at any time. I never feel pressured to eat just because others are eating. Some intermittent fasters do, however, face immense pressure from others to eat, and not everyone can shake it off like I can. It's usually people who are closest to you who are the food pushers, like family members or coworkers. Even when people know that you are fasting, they might try to bring you snacks during your fasting time. They genuinely don't understand how one little bite will absolutely hurt you. These food pushers are hard to handle. Remember this. You never have to eat something to please someone else. You are in control of your own body. Unless you have an eating disorder such as anorexia or you are at an unhealthily low BMI, you should never eat to please someone else. It is your body, and you have to live in it. If the person who is pressuring you is someone you love, like a spouse or a parent, you probably do want to help them understand what you're doing and explain why it's a legitimate approach to wellness. Once I got a very worried text from my stepmother who was concerned about my, quote, starving fasting, and she was convinced that I had an eating disorder. No, I had an eating disorder when I took diet pills throughout the early 2000s. I had an eating disorder when I ate garbage constantly. Now I have eating sanity. For the first time in my life, my eating is not disordered. I sent her a copy of the obesity code to read so that she would understand the science behind fasting. I am not sure that she ever read it, but my dad did. At any rate, I think it reassured her. My recommendation is that you buy any naysayers a copy of the book you're currently listening to, Delay, Don't Deny, and hand it to them so that they understand what you're doing and why. Heck, I recommend that you buy stacks of my book and give a copy to everyone you know. What better present for everyone on your Christmas list? Some people, particularly mothers of girls, also worry about what signal they're sending to their young girls by fasting. I understand where these moms are coming from. Fortunately, I have sons because God knew I would screw up any daughters. I agree that mothers particularly need to be careful about what messages we send to our children about food. That could be a whole other book, in fact, How Not to Screw Up Your Children. Maybe I will write that one next. On a serious note, you do want to tread cautiously where your young children are concerned. You don't want to encourage children or teenagers to fast or to become weight obsessed. If you feel that you must discuss it with your children, my advice would be to clearly communicate that the body's nutritional needs change once you're an adult and you are finished growing. Focus on the fact that you fast for health and de-emphasize the weight loss component. Always explain that growing bodies need to be fueled more frequently than adult bodies. Then change the subject. Let them see you eat with gusto when you do eat, and they will realize that food isn't something to be feared. The more matter-of-fact you are about it, the better. Chapter 18, Finding a Support Group. If you are fasting alone, it can be very difficult, as I mentioned in the last chapter. You may not be confident that what you're doing is healthy, and there are many temptations to eat every single day. People close to you may not understand what you are doing, and you can be tempted to quit out of frustration. I honestly think that was my problem from 2009 to 2014. No one I knew in real life had ever heard of intermittent fasting, and there was zero support around me. I would start and stop, start and stop, start and stop. Meanwhile, I got fatter and fatter. When I got serious about taking control of my health in 2014, I turned to Facebook groups for support. I genuinely believe that these groups have made a huge difference to my long-term success. I have learned so very much from others in these communities. There are many intermittent fasting groups on Facebook, and some are better than others. I have left all of the groups except for two, and those are the ones where I am the group administrator. I had to leave the others, because in every other group, people give terrible advice, such as, diet soda is great during the fast, and it works for me. Sigh. To combat all of the misinformation, I felt the need to start my own groups, where I can put forth a consistent message about fasting best practices. The more I understood about how the body works, the harder it was for me to sit back and watch people give bad advice to others. Maybe I can't save the world, but I can control the message in my own little part of it. In my groups, we want to make sure that we are giving advice based on research, so people have the greatest chance of success. Not all Facebook groups are friendly, by the way. I have actually been thrown out of intermittent fasting groups because of my big mouth. Oops. One of the most infamous Facebook groups in the intermittent fasting community preaches that the only reason intermittent fasting works is because you are restricting calories. Don't even say the word insulin to them. They won't allow anyone to mention the idea that fasting has certain metabolic and hormonal advantages beyond just the calorie restriction component. And if you do mention something of the sort, first they will ridicule you, and then they will ban you from the group. I lasted 30 minutes in that group before I was banned. I'm not sure how anyone can read the research and not realize that there is so much more going on in the body than just calories in, calories out, but they are free to practice intermittent fasting with calorie counting if they want to. I'm pretty sure most of them won't be buying my book, and that's okay with me. If you are interested in following intermittent fasting using the principles I have outlined in this book, I would like to invite you to join one of my Facebook groups for support. Both are closed groups, meaning that your membership must be approved by an administrator before you can join. I am very particular about who joins the groups, and if you have a suspicious-looking Facebook profile, I will not approve your membership. Suspicious profiles include ones with very intense privacy settings because I can't tell if you're a real person, and also profiles where you list multi-level marketing or diet companies as your employer. No, you can't join my Facebook group and try to sell us your amazing body wraps or protein shakes. I am onto your tricks, people. We also don't want you to join our groups and spam us with links to your blog on nutrition. If you are interested in joining and I deny your request, oops, send me a message on Facebook Messenger explaining why you want to join and request membership again. If you mention that you have read my book, you are definitely going to be approved for membership, because I know that you are well informed about how to fast properly. My first group is called One Meal a Day IF Lifestyle, and it has been active since August of 2015. It is a fantastic community of intermittent fasters. As you can tell from the group name, it is targeted specifically to people who follow a one meal a day intermittent fasting approach. If you are interested in a group targeted more specifically to the concepts outlined in this book and one that is open to different types of intermittent fasting besides and including one meal a day, you should join my second group, Delay Don't Deny Intermittent Fasting Support. This group is for anyone who wants to follow an intermittent fasting lifestyle of any type, whether it is one meal a day or 4-3 or something else entirely. As I mentioned, finding your own support system can be the difference between success and failure. Intermittent fasting can be quite difficult if you feel like you are alone. If you decide to join our intermittent fasting community, I hope to see you around. Chapter 19, Troubleshooting. What if I am not seeing results? What if you aren't losing weight or inches, and yes, you are following your selected fasting regimen just as you should, with nothing that spikes insulin during the fasting time? It's so hard to feel like you are doing everything right and getting no results. If you aren't having success, something is happening in your body to prevent weight loss. First, think about this. How long have you been overweight? If you have been struggling with this long term, you may be severely insulin resistant. That can lead to high circulating insulin all day long, even when fasting properly. If this is true for you, then there are a couple of options. My first suggestion would be to give yourself more time for the benefits of fasting to kick in. It can take a while to repair years of damage. You may feel like you aren't getting results, but actually some fantastic healing could be going on in your body. Another question to consider, have you been restricting calories long term prior to starting your fasting regimen? If so, you may have slowed your metabolism through the long term calorie restriction. Remember, your body wants to protect you from starvation, so a slowed metabolism is the expected result of a low-calorie diet. Over time, you need fewer and fewer calories just to maintain your weight. If you think this could be true for you, give yourself some time for the metabolic boosting benefits of fasting to kick in. Make sure that you are not continuing to restrict during your eating window. Eventually, your body should get the message that you aren't in a famine, and the fasting period should boost your metabolism so you are able to lose weight. If you have given it a while and you still aren't seeing any progress, it may be time to consider what you are eating. I know. I said that with intermittent fasting, you could eat whatever you want, and that works for most people. However, we are all different. Just because 95% of people can eat whatever they want and lose weight with intermittent fasting, you could be part of the 5% that needs to adapt what you eat. Also, I just made up that 95-5 statistic. Oops. As far as I know, no one has compiled that data yet. Now that would be an interesting study. If you have tried, and I mean really tried, to follow intermittent fasting, and you are sure that you are fasting properly, and you aren't losing any weight or inches, my first suggestion would be to eliminate heavily processed foods for a while and see if that makes a difference. As I mentioned in the chapter on what to eat, The Science of Skinny does a great job explaining how to avoid processed foods and why you might want to consider doing so. Hopefully, this will be the only tweak you need. Again, give yourself some time to see if it works for you. If you still don't see results after sufficient time has passed, then you may need to consider eating according to low-carb, high-fat principles for a while. This is a step that you may need to take if you're severely insulin resistant or a type 2 diabetic. Dr. Fung talks about the low-carb, high-fat lifestyle frequently on his blog and Intensive Dietary Management and in his book, The Obesity Code. He pairs intermittent fasting with low-carb, high-fat eating and has gotten phenomenal results with his patients. Again, I am not a doctor, so you shouldn't take medical advice from me. However, Dr. Fung is a doctor, so I recommend searching out his work and seeing what he has to say about it. I believe that he even takes on long-distance patients. By switching to low-carb, high-fat, over time, it may help you bring down your high insulin levels and tap into fat reserves, if that is indeed what is keeping you from losing weight. Based on what I have read, I would predict that after a while, you will begin releasing the weight by pairing low-carb, high-fat with intermittent fasting, and eventually, you may be able to add back carbs slowly once you have reversed the underlying insulin resistance. I don't suggest this lightly, because you know I love carbs, and I can't imagine not eating them. My motto is delay, don't deny, and I never want to tell anyone that you need to deny yourself anything you want to eat. Some people do seem to need this extra step, though, and I would not be doing you a favor if I didn't mention it. One other option for healing underlying insulin resistance is longer fasts. Dr. Fung and Jimmy Moore discuss longer fasts in their collaborative work, The Complete Guide to Fasting. That book has a heavy low-carb, high-fat slant, but they also discuss implementation of longer fasts and why you might want to consider them. If you are interested, I suggest that you read their book for more information. Longer fasts should be attempted under the supervision of a health professional who is experienced with fasting protocols. There are other factors that can affect weight loss, such as medications and stress. If you are taking any medications that are known for causing weight gain, you are probably going to have a harder time losing weight. Of course, do not stop any medications without your doctor's approval. If you are under a great deal of stress, your body can resist weight loss through the actions of excess cortisol. As we learned in the chapter about insulin, hormones are very important in our bodies, and they control many functions behind the scenes. Try to find ways to manage the stress in your life and make sure you are getting enough sleep. Easier said than done, am I right? Most importantly, if you feel like you aren't getting results, make sure that you really aren't getting results. I have seen people who claim they are not getting results, and in actuality, they haven't given themselves enough time or they have unrealistic expectations. As I mentioned, intermittent fasting isn't a fast weight loss plan. Just because weight loss isn't fast, that doesn't mean it isn't happening at exactly the right pace for your body. Remember the power of weighing daily and then taking a weekly average for comparison purposes, or throw away the scale completely. Even if you don't see fast results, intermittent fasting has so many other positive effects beyond weight loss. Chapter 20, A Word About Exercise. Move, the end. There's your word. I kid. We all know that exercise is good for our bodies. Studies show that exercise helps our mood as well. But do you know that exercise is not really that effective for weight loss? Now you probably think I've lost my mind. You have heard all of your life that you need to exercise to lose weight. The more you move your body, the slimmer you will be, right? I've certainly heard it my whole life. If you want to lose weight, move more. When I was young, the exercise craze was really taking off. Olivia Newton-John wanted to get physical. In hindsight, I'm pretty sure that's not what she really meant, even though she was wearing workout clothes in the videos. Everyone loved jazzercise. People started to jog. Aerobics classes took off around the country. We were sweating to the oldies. Fast forward to 2016. These days, there's a fitness center on almost every corner. Heck, you can work out 24 hours a day if you want to. Has this made us thinner and healthier as a nation? Absolutely not, as I'm sure you know. Time to pull in another study. Search for a study called Constrained Total Energy Expenditure and Metabolic Adaptation to Physical Activity in Adult Humans. Do you recognize any words from the Biggest Loser study I mentioned in the chapter on calories? Hopefully, you realize that metabolic adaptation is present in the title of this study as well. In this 2016 study, researchers expected that as physical activity went up, energy expenditure would go up as well. It's what we've all been told: move more, burn more. Our portable fitness tracking wristbands tell us precisely how much we are burning at all times, right? Well, the hypothesis did seem to hold true for moderate activity levels when compared to low levels of activity. However, what was not expected is that there appears to be a point where the body adapts and no further benefits in energy expenditure are realized. What this means is people who move moderately do burn more energy than people who are sedentary. However, when you try to ramp up your physical activity beyond moderate activity levels, your body adapts and energy expenditure does not increase as expected. So, should you exercise? Of course you should. Moderate activity is important for health, and it will provide some benefits with energy expenditure. Find an enjoyable way to move your body. Have fun. But you do not need to do hours and hours of weekly cardiovascular exercise that you don't enjoy. Remember, anything more than moderate exercise is not going to make your energy expenditure increase as your body will adapt. Excessive exercise always made me hungrier anyway. Our grandparents called it working up a good appetite for a reason. Exercise for health in a way that you enjoy moving your body, but don't think that it is going to make you lose a lot of weight. As we age, resistance training or weight training or muscle building activities are also useful for overall health. These types of exercise are very good for us, and I highly encourage you to incorporate some sort of muscle building activities into your routine. But will they help us lose weight? You may have heard that increased muscle mass increases metabolism, and according to my brief research on the topic, I asked Uncle Google, an increase of 2 to 5 pounds of muscle mass does rev up metabolism by about 50 calories of energy expenditure per day. Get one of those 100 calorie packs of cookies and throw away half of them. Congratulations, you have really earned that half pack of gross cookies. On second thought, throw all of them away and eat something that tastes better, like cheesecake. That's what I'd do. As with cardio, resistance training is very good for your body, but it isn't going to cause dramatic weight loss for most of us. I try to move my body in ways that I enjoy. I'll take a walk after dinner around the neighborhood with my husband. I have a weighted hula hoop, and I will use it for a few minutes before bed. I'm amazing at the hula hoop, by the way. I also own a machine called a vibration plate. It's supposed to be great for working our muscles efficiently. It doesn't take much time to use, and I really enjoy it. So, about exercise. Yes, you totally need to move your body, but don't expect weight loss miracles related to exercise. Exercise for health, not for weight loss. Appendix A, my weight loss story. I have always been interested in diets, even when I was the skinniest and smallest kid in my class. Growing up, I was scrawny, and I remember being all knobby knees and bony elbows. Even so, I watched my mother, a dance teacher, as she dieted over the years. She had a calorie counting book, and everything you could think of was written in there. I remember abalone was on the first page, and someone had underlined it in pencil. I've never eaten abalone. What even is it? But I remember seeing it in that little book. Because of watching my mother count calories, when I packed on the freshman 15, I decided that the best way to lose a little weight was calorie counting. I cut back for a few weeks and bam, back to normal. Those were the days, right? It seemed so simple back in my late teens. The weight was fairly constant and I didn't have to think about it much, but whenever I wanted to drop a few pounds, calorie counting worked for me. All throughout college, calorie counting was the method of choice to maintain my desired weight. There is one funny story that I have to share. During that period, I remember my college roommate and I tried a super fun diet called the shot of rice diet. I think she made it up. I hope so anyway. The plan was, whenever we got hungry, we would microwave a shot of rice in a small bowl of water, and then we also drank a lot of beer. Hey, it was college. She and I remain great friends to this day, and I was able to introduce her to intermittent fasting. It is a lot more delicious eating this way than following the shot of rice diet, though there is a lot less beer now. After I graduated from college and began teaching, I found that the school cafeteria lunches were causing me to pack on the pounds. It was the early 90s, and I weighed maybe 135 to 140 pounds on a 5-foot-5-inch frame. Probably 5 of the pounds were my bangs, and my hairspray was my best friend. Any ladies my age know of what I speak. If not, Google 1990s hair, and once you stop laughing, you can pick up from here. This was the period of time where fat was the enemy, and suddenly there was no more need for calorie counting. The first diet book I read was called The T-Factor Diet, and it sounded awesome. I decided to give it a try. I honestly can't remember what the T stands for, but I remember the message of the book. Fat makes you fat. That made so much sense. Fat makes you fat. Of course it does. If you eat fat, it will instantly be deposited on your body. Eat as much food as you want, as long as you avoid fat, and you will be thin. At the time, fat-free was all the rage, and you could buy fat-free everything. Snackwells, jelly beans, potatoes, corn, all low-fat. I would drive through McDonald's on my way to work and order 2 fat-free apple muffins. It was okay to drink a Coke with it because Coke is also fat-free. I remember telling my grandmother about what I was doing and how sciencey it was, and she said, in typical grandmother wisdom, "If corn makes you thin, why do they give it to pigs to fatten them up?" Of course, I ignored her and went on with my fat gram counting. You know what? I actually lost a little bit of weight as long as I kept up with the counting and never ate anything that was delicious. Eventually, though, I grew sick of fat-free, chocolate-covered, fat-free marshmallow cookies and fat-free dry potatoes and realized that I love fat. Butter, I love you. No, fat-free was not for me long-term. Next up, calorie counting, part deux. I remembered my early success with calorie counting, and it seemed like the best idea at the time. I was used to counting things, so I would count calories again. I read that 1,200 calories per day was the perfect amount for weight loss, so I started counting up everything I ate. My family still makes fun of me for that one time I brought a frozen entree to a family dinner. I remember what brand of frozen spaghetti I brought and that it had 220 calories. Counting calories worked for me again, and I got down to a tiny 118 pounds. Eventually, though, I got tired of counting up all of those calories and monitoring every little bite that went into my mouth. Even so, calorie counting remained my go-to strategy for years when I wanted to drop a few or dozens of pounds. Of course, it works for a while, but it is miserable to stick to over a long period of time. Not only that, but your body will eventually rebel and your body will adapt. Your metabolism will slow, which I discuss in the chapter about calories in the Biggest Loser study, and shazam, weight loss stops, and then the dreaded weight regain begins. Calorie counting wears you down after a while. If you have done it, you know what I mean. After having my two sons 18 months apart in 1998 and 1999, I needed to lose weight again. I found myself at 163 pounds after the second pregnancy, which was horrifying to me at the time because that was the weight I was when I went into the hospital to deliver my first son. It doesn't sound all that high now since I eventually topped 210 pounds. One of my friends was losing weight and I asked her how. Diet pills? Wowza! I could go to the doctor and get a prescription for diet pills that would curb my appetite and I would lose weight? Sign me up for that! So that is exactly what I did. I would absolutely not recommend it to anyone, but it sure worked for me at the time. I was always on edge and I couldn't sleep, but I was thin again, finally. As long as I took the magic diet pills, I had no appetite and I lost weight. I maintained that regimen for more years than I want to admit. I looked great though. I was able to maintain a size 4 to 6 and felt great in my own skin. When I didn't feel like I was jumping out of my skin, that is. Fortunately, I realized that I was probably doing damage to my body, and I stopped with the diet pills. Of course, my weight rebounded like crazy. I put on 50 pounds in a year and a half. Oops. After that, I finally read my first low-carb diet book. Forget low-fat. The science behind low-carb eating made perfect sense. Dr. Atkins, you are a genius. I can eat my beloved butter. I can eat it straight from a spoon if I want to. This was finally the plan for me. Cheese, hot dogs, meat, bacon, eggs, straight heavy cream in my coffee. Gag. Knowing what I know now from reading the obesity code, I know why I wasn't successful at low-carb eating. Protein also spikes insulin. But I sure gave it a try over and over and over again. I was never able to last more than a week or two before I would cave. I remember one time standing at the kitchen pantry shoving those fried onions that you put on a green bean casserole straight into my mouth. My body was crying out for some carbs. I never felt well eating low carb, and I also never got that sense of well-being that some low carb eaters describe. I always felt like I was starving. From 2005 to 2008, I bounced from low carb to low calorie, always trying to keep my weight in control. Unfortunately, my weight continued to spiral up and up and up. I gave up for a while and started ignoring the problem, and I bought bigger pants. And bigger pants. Still bigger pants. My former size 6 pants looked like doll's clothes to me, and I was busting out of a size 16. I was dieting myself bigger and bigger every year. My next foray into dieting was HCG. I heard about it from a friend who heard about it from her dentist or something like that. It was a super secret diet from the 1950s, based on the work of a, quote, famous European weight loss doctor. And you injected yourself with pregnancy hormone, or HCG, daily to trick your body into thinking you were pregnant. The premise is that our bodies are protected by HCG while pregnant, and even if we are starving, our bodies want us to produce a healthy baby. Therefore, our metabolisms won't slow down even though we are only eating 500 calories a day for 6 weeks. Oh, did I forget to mention that part? You have to eat 500 calories a day for 6 weeks from a very short list of allowed foods, and you also inject yourself with HCG that may or may not have come from the urine of pregnant mares. Yes, I was officially that desperate. I injected myself with what might have been mare pee, and I was able to lose weight. The weight just fell off at the rate of about a half a pound per day. Well, of course it did. I was eating 500 calories of food per day. When my 40th birthday rolled around in 2009, I was at a nice weight for me. I fit into size 8, and I knew that HCG was the miracle I had always been looking for. Not so fast. The rebound weight gain from that plan was insane. I was unable to keep the weight off and got more and more desperate. It was at that point that I discovered the key to weight loss, intermittent fasting. only I wasn't ready for it yet. I can't remember which book I found first. It was either Fast Five or the Up Day Down Day diet. Instinctually, I knew that intermittent fasting would be my answer. The problem was that I still lived with a diet mentality. I would half-heartedly try fasting for a week or two and then quit. I felt like I deserved to eat all day just like everyone else. I wasted so many years with the answer right in my grasp. You know what? I'm not sorry about it. I think I needed to become obese to appreciate how magical it feels to be slim. If I had never become obese, I may have settled for being merely overweight for the rest of my life. Thank you, obesity, for slapping me in the face and making me see the light. From 2009 to 2014, I dabbled in various intermittent fasting plans interspersed with more and more desperate diet attempts. These were the years where I bought every diet book and tried it, and I bought every weight loss supplement ever sold. Shakes, pills, cleanses. I tried them all. Every multi-level marketing plan that exists. Again, I tried them all. The shakes were literally the worst. I remember one plan where you were supposed to have a shake for breakfast and a shake for lunch and then a sensible dinner. All those shakes did was make my stomach mad, and I was starving all the time. Those shakes cost me hundreds of dollars per month, and I didn't get thin. What a waste of time and money. My ultimate wake-up call came in April of 2014. I was on a cruise with my family, and I can remember how tired I was. We were hiking the trails in Belize and climbing the Mayan ruins, and I could barely move my big body up the steps. I didn't feel like I was in the right body. It was hard moving through the day while carrying that much excess weight. Then I saw myself in a photo. Who was that? I looked like someone had inflated my body with an air pump. At that very moment, I hit rock bottom and decided that I would not be that obese woman any longer. Nope. When I got back from that trip, I was officially done with obesity, and it was like a switch had been flipped. I was ready to take my life back. I turned to my trusty friend, HCG. This time, I found a local clinic that was incredibly expensive because I knew that if I spent a lot of money, I would be committed. I was right. Every day, I would inject myself with HCG, and I would eat my 500 calories. Weigh-ins at the clinic were once a week, and the accountability of those weigh-ins kept me from giving up. The guy who weighed us in was young, and I was not going to be the fat lady who didn't lose weight. Nope. I lost 25 pounds in 5 weeks and started to feel better. After a round of HCG, we were expected to take a maintenance break for 6 weeks before we could do another round. At that point, I fully intended to HCG myself down to goal. During the maintenance break, we were required to eat low-carb foods only, and we couldn't eat any sugars or starches. We were also expected to weigh daily, and if our weight ever went up more than 2 pounds from our baseline number, we had to have a steak day. We were expected to abstain from food all day and then eat a huge steak for dinner. Nothing with the steak, just the steak. Isn't that crazy? I kept to the low-carb plan for the full 6 weeks and decided that low-carb actually made a lot of sense. I reread Good Calories, Bad Calories and decided that this time low-carb was going to be the plan for me. I vowed that I would never go back to that HCG clinic for another round of madness. I was done with that crazy restrictive plan. The science behind low-carb made so much sense, and I threw myself into the low-carb, high-fat, keto community fully. I joined all of the Facebook groups, and I bought all of the books. I was in it to win it. The science was very compelling. Insulin causes us to gain weight, and we need to lower our insulin to lose weight. Does that sound familiar? Unfortunately, I never lost any weight that summer. I stuck to low-carb, high-fat, keto religiously, but all I did was maintain. I never felt like I had eaten a meal, and I was constantly hungry, so I ate and ate and ate. I think my body really prefers carbs for satiety, and eventually, my hair started falling out in a shocking way. I knew that it was time to reintroduce carbs, but I didn't want to regain the 25 pounds I had lost. At that time, I remembered the Carbohydrate Addict's Diet from the 1990s. I found a copy and started reading. If you think back to what I wrote about it in the chapter on adjusting to an intermittent fasting lifestyle, the premise of the Carbohydrate Addict's Diet was that you ate 2 low-carb meals during the day, and then you could have a reward meal of whatever you wanted in an hour time frame. I started following the plan, and after that first meal with the carbs, I felt immediately better. I actually started to lose weight slowly, even though I had added carbs back into the nightly reward meal. Summer was over, and it was time to go back to work. If you have ever eaten low carb, you know that it takes a lot of work to make sure you have the right foods with you. I had to pack a lunch and take it to school, and it had to be low carb. Ugh, I just couldn't do it. Too much work. I thought about Rachel Heller's story. In the introduction to the Carbohydrate Addict's book, she explained how she discovered that she was a carbohydrate addict after she started skipping breakfast and lunch each day, and when she ate one meal per day, she had sanity around food for the first time in her life. Sound familiar? She lost a great deal of weight and was able to maintain her loss over a long period of time. Of course, this was not the plan she promoted in her Carbohydrate Addict's book. I think the idea of not eating all day was too extreme, and she thought that people would be more open to a plan that allowed you to eat three meals per day. I connected her original plan to what I remembered about Fast Five. Suddenly, Fast Five no longer seemed restrictive, as it had to me back in the 2009 to 2014 years. I had been living an extremely restrictive lifestyle for over 3 months, and the idea of a five-hour eating window seemed positively luxurious. I immediately switched over to Fast Five, and my intermittent fasting lifestyle began in earnest. I got the idea for daily weighing with weekly averaging from the Carbohydrate Addict's book, so I carried the habit into my intermittent fasting lifestyle. Finally, I had a consistent way to illustrate that I was losing weight every week, since my weekly average always went down, even when my Friday-to-Friday weights were up slightly. I was so happy to finally be moving in the right direction again, even if it was very slow. Of course, this was the period where my goal was to maximize eating opportunities during the five-hour window, and I was eating two meals every day. Even with the slow weight loss, I stuck with Fast Five until October, when I ran into someone in the Fast Five Facebook group who talked about a very fast weight loss plan called the Five-Bite Diet. Note, I would never recommend this diet to anyone now that I know better. Never. I'm only including it here because I don't want to lie to you about how I lost my weight. I'm very lucky that I didn't tank my metabolism, and I'm pretty sure that the only reason I didn't is because I lacked the willpower to continue longer than a few weeks. I know some wonderful ladies who had much more willpower than I did, and they followed this diet for a long period of time perfectly, and they lost incredible amounts of weight. Do you know what else happened? They have had a terrible time maintaining their loss. They have to keep going back on the restrictive diet to keep their weight down, and it's all because they were much more dedicated than I was. Don't do it. Don't try this diet, I beg you. In fact, don't try any of the crazy diets I did. Stick to intermittent fasting. Promise me. Remember, I may have lost 35 pounds by this point, but I was still 40 pounds from my goal weight. I was still living with a diet mentality, and my only thought was to get to goal, and as fast as possible. I was ripe for a crash diet after losing at a snail's pace for so many months. How many of us fall for these crash diets and their promise of fast weight loss? Don't do it, even if it is tempting. The five-bite diet has a very interesting premise, and as familiar as I was with every diet ever written, it was a new one for me. It was written by a bariatric doctor who worked with patients who had weight loss surgery. He suggests that instead of having weight loss surgery, it makes a lot more sense to eat as if you had had the surgery, but without mutilating your body. He recommends skipping breakfast and then eating only 5 bites of food for lunch and 5 bites of food for dinner. You don't have the surgery, but you eat as much food as if you had. 10 bites of food per day is not very much food. I started on October 29th of 2014 at 177 pounds, and after 7 days, I was already at 167.4. The weight loss was astonishing. Only HCG had previously allowed me to lose at that rate. After 14 days, I had gotten to 162.5, which was still 5 pounds in a week. 1 week later, I was down to 159.8. Suddenly, though, my weight seemed to plateau. Over the next 5 days, I didn't lose any weight at all. It was mid-November, and my body was screaming at me to stop this crazy diet. Of course it was. I was in danger of ruining my metabolism. Fortunately, I listened to my hormonal signals. Remember, when you get an almost uncontrollable signal that you need to eat, it means you are doing something wrong. You never want this feeling. It's an SOS from your body. Instead, what you want to feel is peace around food while you slowly lose weight. Remember what I told you earlier about getting your hormones in balance. I decided to go back to intermittent fasting to maintain the weight I lost on the 5-bite diet. It's no wonder that my body was mad at me. I calculated that I was only eating 500 calories or so per day, and I had done that for 25 days straight. Knowing what I know now, I'm not surprised that my weight loss stopped. I'm sure my metabolism was slowing down. As soon as I started back on intermittent fasting, my weight bounced back up to the lower 160s and it stayed there until after Christmas. Over that November and December season, I toyed around with several different intermittent fasting regimens. I tried Eat Stop Eat, which is one of the plans listed in the annotated bibliography. I would mix it up with days of Fast 5, and I also incorporated some up days and down days in the style of alternate daily fasting. Overall, I managed to maintain a 12-pound loss from that round of the 5-bite diet by following various intermittent fasting techniques. On December 28th of 2015, I realized I was ready to do another round of the 5-bite diet. I was a glutton for punishment, and I apparently wanted more of it. The doctor who developed the diet suggested that you do it continually until you lose all of the weight you want to lose. I had 30 pounds to go to get to my goal weight, so I decided to commit. I weighed 165 pounds. Fortunately, starving yourself is easier said than done. My body allowed me to stick with it for 21 days, and I lost 13 more pounds. However, I was miserable, the weight loss slowed to a crawl, and I instinctually knew this wasn't good for me. Again, I got all of the hormonal signals, such as uncontrollable hunger, which should have alerted me that there was a problem. Keep in mind that this was before I learned about how long periods of calorie restriction slow the metabolism, and shows like The Biggest Loser were still teaching us that the faster you could lose the weight, the better. It was not the smartest thing I ever did. Do not try it. I did learn something interesting about myself during those 21 days, though. I learned that if I saved all 10 bites for dinner, it was easier. I could fast all day and then eat a 500-calorie 10-bite dinner. I was eating one meal a day. It was so much easier than two smaller and less satisfying meals. After abandoning the 5-bite diet for good, and I do mean forever, I planned to go back to Fast 5, so I reread the Fast 5 book for inspiration. That's when I realized that Dr. Herring mentioned several times in his book that he was only eating one meal per day. Suddenly, it clicked. Fast 5 was initially intended to include one evening meal, not two shoved into a 5-hour period of time. I immediately began using a one-meal-a-day approach. I weighed 152 pounds on January 20th of 2015, and I began one meal a day in earnest. Because I wanted to lose weight faster, I limited myself to a window of about 1 hour most days, but I did not count calories or restrict foods. I allowed myself to eat until I was satisfied every night. After all of the madness of the previous year and all of the crazy restrictions, one meal a day felt luxurious. I reached 135 pounds on March 17th and declared myself officially at goal. The one meal a day approach worked so much better than a 5-hour window had ever worked for me before. I was able to get to goal at the rate of about 2 pounds per week. That was much better than the pace of loss when I ate as much as I could in a 5-hour window. I still wasn't convinced that one meal a day was a lifestyle, but I knew that intermittent fasting was my ticket for long-term success. At that point, I was happily wearing a size 4 and sometimes a 2, and I understood that as long as I continued with intermittent fasting and kept a close watch on my weight, I had the tools to keep the weight off forever. My confidence was high. I maintained easily in the 130 to 132-pound range from March through the late fall of 2015. I experimented with several different intermittent fasting strategies during that time period. 5-2, with two full 36 to 48-hour fasts, suited me very well over the summer, and then when school started back and I realized I was too lazy to pack a lunch for 3 of the 5 school days, I went back to eating one meal a day during the week. At that point, I got a bit cocky and decided that I should follow one meal a day during the week and have free weekends. This was in October of 2015. I slowly gained weight throughout November and December, and in January of 2016, I realized that I had gotten up to 138 pounds. If I continued to gain weight at that pace, I was afraid that I would be right back where I started from. In January of 2016, I went back to one meal a day every day, but the weight didn't drop off this time. I managed to maintain in the mid to upper 130s, but I wanted to see the lower 130s again. I stuck with it, but the weight didn't budge. In late February, I decided that I needed to take more drastic measures, and I started doing 4-3, with 3 full fasts of 36 hours per week. Slowly, the weight started going down. I inched back down to the lower 130s. Here is something to know about that time period in my life. I was using stevia constantly. I drank coffee all morning with stevia, then I drank apple cinnamon flavored hot tea with more stevia all afternoon. I was constantly spiking my insulin, only I didn't realize what that was doing to my body. In March, Dr. Fung's book, The Obesity Code, was released. I eagerly read it cover to cover. He was insistent that we absolutely must stop using all sweeteners or sweet flavors during the fast, and that includes stevia. I kicked and screamed, but I did it. I drank my coffee black. I stopped drinking the sweet-flavored hot teas. I followed all fasting recommendations to keep insulin low during the fast. The change was immediate. I lost more weight. The fast was easier. I didn't think so much about when it was time to eat. Could avoiding stevia and that sweet-flavored tea really have made such a difference for me? I think so, yes. Right around that time, I realized that 4-3 was no longer easy. I dreaded the fasting days, and I even began to dread the up days because I didn't like the way I felt when I ate 3 meals per day. I went back to my 1-meal-a-day lifestyle, and I've been doing it ever since. I decided that I would limit myself to 1 meal a day, and I would focus on keeping my eating window to a time period of 5 hours or less. The switch from 4-3 to 1 meal a day made me feel even better. Now that I had given up stevia, I finally understood appetite correction. I didn't think about food during the day, and my lifestyle was truly effortless. I knew that I had figured it out. I stopped spiking my insulin during the day. I ate according to my hunger signals each evening, and I felt better and better over time. I stopped weighing myself in April of 2016 and haven't gotten on the scale since. I know that I have lost a few more pounds since then, but I'm not really trying. I would estimate that my weight is in the upper 120s at this point, but I really don't care what the scale says. I went down 1 jeans size from May to September, and my fasting lifestyle feels truly effortless. This is what I do now. I eat 1 amazing meal every day, and if I need a snack before or after my meal, I have it. From May to early October, I tracked my eating window length daily using an app my son made. I enjoyed tracking my window, and the app helped me to be consistent. I learned that my average eating window is 2.5 hours per day, and that seems to be my sweet spot. If you are interested in tracking your eating window, by the way, I highly recommend my son's app. The other apps tracked the lengths of the fast, and I wanted to track my eating window. It's called Window Intermittent Fasting Tracker by Cal Stevens, and it's only available for iPhone. The way my day usually looks is this. I'll get home from work between 4:30 to 5 every day. Some days I choose to have a snack, and some days I don't. I may open my window at 4:30, or I might wait until 5:30. Other days, I wait even longer. Depending on my family's schedule, I usually start cooking dinner somewhere between 5 and 6 o'clock. If my window hasn't already opened before then, I will open it when cooking dinner. I taste things as I cook, and by the time dinner is done, I'm ready for a great meal. We sit down to dinner, and I usually enjoy a glass of Prosecco with my meal. After dinner, once the kitchen is cleaned up, I may decide that I want something sweet, and I'll eat a little something. Ice cream is one of my favorite treats, and I enjoy it often. As I mentioned before, nothing is off limits. I delay, and I don't deny. On weekends, I often find myself watching the clock a bit more. Sometimes I'll open my window with a snack at 3 if I feel like I need one. My eating windows tend to be longer on Saturday and Sunday, but I still try to limit myself to no more than 5 hours. Some days it's more like 6 hours, but usually it's less than 5. One thing is for sure, I'm no longer having free weekends like I did back in the fall of 2015. I realized that doesn't work well for me. I feel better when keeping to a fasting schedule every day. So, you've heard my whole crazy story. After all of my crazy attempts at dieting for decades, I finally have peace and sanity. I am confident that I have found my permanent strategy. I'm a little leaner today than I was last month. Eventually, I figure my body will settle at whatever is my ideal weight, but I'm not focused on the numbers anymore. As I continue fasting, I am noticing that any loose or wrinkly skin that I have is tightening up. My arms look toned, even though I don't work out. My belly looks better than it used to, even though I know I'll never have a fitness model belly. I'm a 47-year-old mom of 2, and I used to weigh 210 pounds. No way is that belly going to ever be perfect, and that is okay. The longer I fast, the better my body shape becomes. Thanks, autophagy. I have more energy than I have ever had in my life. I look younger now than I did 10 years ago. Intermittent fasting, thank you. Appendix B, 30 journal prompts. Face it, so much of the weight loss process is mental, and we would all agree that there is a huge emotional component surrounding food. We celebrate with food. We reward ourselves with food. In fact, it's impossible to avoid delicious food. Journaling is a powerful process. I haven't officially journaled in a notebook, but I have written many Facebook posts in the many weight loss groups I've been a member of over the years. Writing out my thoughts and feelings has been so very helpful to me. Basically, I have made the whole world my weight loss journal. You may not want to be as public about your struggles as I have been, so a private journal just for you.